Hey Brian, hey Rick, Shooter McGavin here on a Masters weekend, day two. Wow. So I heard your From the Tips podcast is kind of badass.
But then I gotta put the pot on and all that shit. And like, who wants to do that? It's not a one cup maker. If it was a one cup maker, I'd think about it. But it's a whole pot.
I think you should just drink a whole pot and then see where the night takes you.
Oh, I'd poop. I'd poop endlessly. Just be a whole strain.
That's true. You can still sleep on coffee, so.
I can't. I don't have that kind of problem. You know, I think the coffee just makes me tired faster. I wouldn't say it wakes me up. Makes
I've me heard faster. I've heard that that's a sign of ADHD.
I've also heard that, which you know,
wouldn't shock me because caffeine also does that to me, and I also have trouble paying attention to things. So,
all right, you're gonna thank Zoom Siri so we can get this going.
Oh, I thought we were just going with what we had.
Oh, we probably will, but you know. Okay. I can't physically start the podcast to thank Zoom Siri. I can't do it.
Thanks, Zoom Siri.
There it is. What's up, everyone? Welcome to From the Tips. It is me, your boy Brian, always joined by my fantastic co-host, Rick Landis. How we doing, good buddy, Mr. I Got Two Podcasts Now?
I know. I'm like I said, I'm in the groove. Just finished recording my new podcast that I'm a co-host on. Spill the D, which
well,
is
well, the podcast isn't new.
The podcast isn't. I am a new host to this podcast because the other co-host had to step away, and my fiance is the other host. So,
see, I heard that you were high on the free agent market. You know, so here's the thing about podcasting: you're allowed to have multiple in the podcasting realm. So, you know, Rick had one. He, you know, it was kind of a minor league situation. I wouldn't call us professionals at this point, but he was hot in the free agency market. And, you know, an opening came up at another podcast, and he was like, "You want to know what? I'm going to see what it's like on the pro level."
They checked out my resume, aka listened to our podcast because that's all it is.
This is very extensive resume that I possess.
Yeah, I also have the extensive knowledge of Disney, so that helps. It's a Disney podcast for those that don't know, which probably all of you, but it's called Spill the D. I'm a co-host on it now with my fiance Gina, and it's awesome. So go listen to that too. But we're here for From the Tips right now.
We are.
Which means a little bit of everything, including golf. That's our main
game. A splash of everything, including golf. Yes.
Yeah. The golf 100%. Is like our main thing. Except for the fact that everything else is really our main thing, and we talk some golf.
It is true. It is true. We usually spend half an episode talking about other things besides golf, but I'm not going to let you discount the intro there. Yeah, Spill the D, great podcast for all you that like Disney stuff, and that includes Marvel, Star Wars, going to the Disney parks, Disney movies, Disney classics, etc. They go over all that stuff. They are an actual Disney partner podcast, so you know you're getting the real shit from these two, and not any of this like BS from people that aren't actually supported by the company themselves. So if you're into that kind of stuff, like I am, I'm super into Star Wars. If you're into any of that stuff, solid podcast. Go follow it on what's the Instagram handle?
Throwing me for a loop.
Damn, right. I did. Ah. Oh. We were right there. We were right there.
We were.
Like
it was almost
fantastic
really,
ad read.
It's literally just it's literally just Spill the D podcast on Instagram.
Love that.
Yeah. Go follow.
Yeah,
go follow. Go listen. We talked to Universal just now before we hopped on here. So mostly Disney, a little bit of Universal in there every once in a while, a little bit of other stuff. But yeah, go check it out. Much appreciated.
Good stuff. Good stuff.
Also, keep listening to this because
please.
I also enjoy recording this podcast.
Yeah, please. Just keep me afloat here, folks. but Rick, buddy, what do you have in history today?
Well,
I got
today, like literally today, on March, what is it, the 6th?
Well, 6 is today. The day this releases.
Yeah, so on March 6th, the day prior to you guys listening to this, I'm going to give Brian a stroke. We'll get to that point.
I'm so ready.
On March 7th, which is the day you're listening to this, in 1857, baseball decided that 9 innings constitutes a game, not 9 runs. Apparently, that used to be a rule. Didn't know that.
So the game would just go on endlessly until somebody scored 9 runs?
I guess.
Oh, my God. That's exhausting. Baseball games end after 9 innings like 1-0 sometimes.
Yeah.
That's exhausting.
Yeah.
9 runs. Oh, my gosh.
Back in the 1850s, they were like, 9 runs. It's the only way you're really getting a full game in.
Well, I guess that's kind of how cricket is in a way, but that's more dictated by outs made. You can score endless amounts of runs until I think every batter gets out. I think that's how cricket works. I don't really know
about cricket, so
yeah, it's a mystery to me, to be honest with you.
In 1935, on this day, Malcolm Campbell set the world land speed record. Can you guess how fast he was going?
Is this record still here today?
Honestly, not sure.
Okay.
Let me check. I'm going to look it up.
Does it seem like a speed that would be broken? I guess I'm asking for too much information then.
I would say, yeah, they probably have, but it was probably like some like supercar thing. Oh yeah, no. This has definitely been broken. If this is true,
I want to say 180.
So the record at the time was set by Malcolm Campbell, with the land speed record being 276 miles per hour.
Okay,
according to the internet, which is incredibly reliable,
all the time.
I mean, I don't know why you would make this number up. What do you think the current land speed record is?
It's got to be something in the thousands, right?
No, it actually is not.
Oh.
Air speed, probably.
750?
That's a fantastic guess. It's 763. Yeah.
God, that was that close, huh? And I didn't go over. TPIR rules dictate I'm close to the pin.
It exceeded the sound barrier. That's how fast they were going. And jeez. This happened in 1997.
Has no one just attempted since, like, they had that in the 90s and they were like, we could.
Good enough.
I don't wanna. Yeah. Well, could you imagine being in the car when you break a sound barrier?
Yeah, I don't know.
I feel like there's not enough padding for your eardrums at that point.
You have to wear like the plugs and then the headphone things. The cup.
You got to double up.
You got combos like in the headphones. Like you got to have everything. Yeah. I feel like
you got to double sock that. You know. I feel like you got to I feel like there's something that could go wrong with your internal organs. Well, I guess people that fly planes go, you know, mock whatever it is.
Yeah.
Mock Jesus out there. That is fast. Jesus. Could you even imagine just getting close to that kind of speed?
No, not even a little bit.
I feel like I'd poop myself. I'm not a built for speed kind of guy. Yeah,
and I feel like I'm dying,
dude. Like the Velocicoaster at Universal. For those of you, spill the deep podcast. But the Velocicoaster at Universal, isn't that like 80 miles an hour?
Or something, I don't know like how fast that one is.
I thought my face was melting.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, this is so fast. And I realized that I continuously go over that speed on the highway all the time. yeah, I could not imagine breaking that speed. Well, I Googled something while you're giving me that that fun fact. I Googled the land speed record of mayonnaise. And in that time, unfortunately, mayonnaise has never like gone super fast, right? Unless you're talking about being eaten, because boy do we have a stat line for you here. The most mayonnaise eaten in 3 minutes.
That's good enough Guinness land record for me.
The Guinness World Record, a woman ate 5 pounds of mayonnaise in 3 minutes. And there's video evidence.
I see. I like mayonnaise. I do. But 5 pounds of mayonnaise?
Oh my God. What would that do to your internals?
Straight mayonnaise?
Yeah. It's just jugs of mayonnaise. I'm not even kidding.
See, I don't know. I ate like eight little packs of butter one time and I almost threw up. So like,
now,
I can't.
I'm not going to lie to you. There is a Guinness World Record lady right there. I can't watch that anymore. That's kind of disgusting. There is a Guinness World Record lady right there.
Uh-huh.
But she's not cleaning out the jugs, you know? Huh. She's getting most of it, but she's not like.
Yeah.
I feel like we have to clean those out and measure that.
Yeah.
Like, I need some accuracy on this record. We can't just have this mayonnaise world record be based off of guesstimates, okay? Yeah. I need hard soil fact.
We need
if we're
going
to talk about. Yeah,
I like specific ounces.
I'm gonna need you to actually hit me with the real numbers, not just an idea of what she maybe consumed in 3 minutes. No, no maybes. This is mayonnaise we're talking about. Yeah, that's disturbing. For those of you with like a sensitive stomach, I highly suggest not watching the YouTube video. It's kind of gross.
I have to watch it later.
But speaking of which, I believe I was supposed to be having a stroke here. What do you got for me on that one?
This is where we're at. In 1970, there was a men's figure skating championship on this day, March 7th.
Right.
It's in an area that I don't know how to pronounce the name. So what I've done is I've written it down on a sticky note.
Okay.
And I'm going to have you try to pronounce it. And here it is.
Let's see this. All right. Here we go.
And it's backwards. So good luck.
Okay. So it's LJUBLJANA. I'm going to have to say it's Jublana.
Jublana
or Jublana? Did you look up the phonetic spelling?
No. Why did I do that?
Good, because that's how you'd get the information, Rick.
That's no fun.
Okay, so it's the capital of Slovenia. So that's
what is it pronounced? Because I look at it and I see Jublana. Ljubljana.
Ljubljana.
Ljubljana?
Yes, Ljubljana. So I thought the L was silent. Apparently in Slovenia, they say, no. You pronounce all of it. You must.
Except for the J's are E.
Yeah, except, well, I mean, that's that way in Spanish, too, you know, with the Y.
Ljubljana.
Yeah, Ljubljana. Yeah.
But Tim Wood won the figure skating championship here. So that was pretty cool.
Well, out of way, Timmy, huh? There you go.
Say it 4 times fast, Timmy.
In order to actually win the gold, you have to pronounce the city 4 times fast. That's terrible. Oh man, it really goes to show, like, when it comes to like different cultures and different nations and stuff, we have no idea how to even begin to pronunciate most.
We're
of
a bunch of
words.
Idiots when it comes.
We're
to
We're so dumb here in America.
Other countries.
Yeah, and we expect every other country to just know English.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm sorry, we're American around these parts. We're going to need you to speak American. Thank you very much.
We're going to need you to speak American.
Like,
we have, like, the hardest language out of all of them.
Yeah, isn't it, like, I mean, I guess we're kind of, you know, lucky enough to be born with English. But isn't there, like, some words that just, like, some way that words are, like, broken down and makes no sense?
In English? 100%. Have you seen those videos online of the guy that, like, goes over pronunciation of words with
I dance, you dance, he danced? No. Are you saying he's dancing more than me?
No, the guy who's like, the guy who like, who will be like, this word is comb. And then write like tomb. And he's like, so this word is, and the guy's like, tome. And he's like, no, this is tomb. You don't see tomb. How.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's kind of like red and read are spelled the same way.
Uh-huh.
It's just you have to innately know if you're reading it which one it's intending to say.
Yeah, I think
which is unfortunate for everybody.
If I can find this real quick.
Have you seen the one where it's like the German pronunciation of words?
No.
So it goes English, Spanish, French, German or Deutsch, and it's like airplane, aeroplane. Error. And then it goes German. It's like, how does one say airplane in German? Airplane in German. Flugzeug.
Okay.
okay. Hold on. Tell me, Siri, how do I say this?
Flugzeug.
Yes, that's. Yeah. Ew, I don't like so apparently on Google now it like to learn to pronounce you can pull up an AI image of a mouth saying the word.
That's
to
weird.
Try to, is that not creepy? I'm pulling
that
it up.
Is super
it's,
creepy.
That's so weird. I don't want to see a mouth. Ugh. What is wrong with you? Oh, problem.
What?
Problem. My entire what? Google's in German now. What have I done?
Oh no.
Hold on. No, I didn't mean turn. Okay. We're back. We're back. We're back in English. Let's go. That was gonna make this podcast really difficult if everything was in German. I would not know. So we had some sort of golf tournament with words. Don't know what they are. Alrighty. Well, you ready to get into the golf, buddy?
I'm sending you this video real quick.
Oh yes.
Of the guy that I was talking about, because he's so funny. You see that meme where it's like, imagine trying to learn English and seeing the word yacht and not just giving up.
So what you're trying to tell me right now is that's not pronounced yacht. All right, here we go.
Have you seen this guy before?
I definitely have seen this guy before.
You don't see how.
Why? But he goes, you don't see how that.
You don't see how. Works? And he's like, okay. I love when those videos pop up. He cracks me up.
You're not seeing this? Yeah. Oh my gosh. Didn't we have somebody in college that we knew that went for speech path and like phonetic spelling and all that jazz?
Probably.
I think we do somebody like that, but that is something that I could never even begin to attempt, how to get into phonetics and how to spell. But what I did try to get into, folks, is golf. And I'll tell you what, I'm about as successful at it as attempting to form an entire sentence in German. So we're gonna act though like we know a lot about it because we watch it enough to know what it looks like when people are good at it. So speaking of what people are good at, the Arnold Palmer Invitational, because of the name, is an invitational where they actually invite golfers to come. But it is most of the PGA Tour pros. This is another one of those designated events this year that had the larger purse, so it had a lot of the big names come out. Now, if you think that's the last time you're going to hear about designated events in this episode, boy, do we have a doozy for you! Because
boy,
next
are you
year's
wrong.
Yeah, next year's schedule was released for those of you that were kind of following along over the weekend, and not a lot of people are happy about it. We'll get into that later, but we'll talk about the golf that did happen. So another designated event, which means we had all the big names there. However, a big name didn't wind up winning this one. Jon Rahm was in the field. Scottie Scheffler was in the field. Who ends up winning? But Kurt Kitayama. Not only did he win, but he won while holding the 54-hole lead against pretty much all the world's best golfers. You look at the rest of the top 10, Right behind him, Rory McIlroy in second. Harris English, Patrick Cantlay, Jordan Spieth, Tyrrell Hatton, Keegan Bradley, Cameron Young. A bunch of guys that people consider some of the best golfers in the world were behind this kid. And you're probably sitting there wondering, how does something like this happen? That is the beauty of golf, folks, that guys like Kurt Kitayama, who doesn't have a career win, but is young enough and hungry enough to get it done, can, in fact, turn a 54-hole lead into a win. Although he did almost lose it. Some would argue that Jordan Spieth lost it for himself. I would be one of those people. But we'll talk about... Right now, we're just going to react on how Kurt Kitayama got it done. Are you more surprised that he was able to focus up and turn the 54-hole lead into a win? Or are you more surprised that one of these huge names behind him wasn't able to step up and take it from him on a Sunday? Like Rory McIlroy, for example, one shot away from going into a playoff with him, wasn't able to get it done and shot a 70 on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, we know how almost impossible it is to win with a 54-hole lead. It was a few years ago this stat came out, but it was like the conversion percentage was like 33% on,
which is not
converting
good.
A 54-hole lead to a win, which is not a lot. And that's including guys who are some of the better and more well-known golfers that are experienced in holding 54-hole leads that are unable to keep these leads. And then you have a guy who has never won on the PGA Tour, doesn't even like when you break it down, he doesn't know how to win on the PGA Tour yet. Pros say it all the time. Like, there is a little bit of something extra that you have to do to win on tour. And you don't know what that is until you win on tour. So he's going through this whole learning experience and still is able to convert a 54-hole lead, which is very hard to do, not near impossible, but very hard to do, especially when, very like difficult. You said, you have guys like Scotty, like John, like Rory, like Jay Spieth, all these guys who are on your butt the whole time. And you're able to just block out the noise, do what you got to do, and catch your first dub. You get the fake jacket, the fake Masters jacket, because Arnold Palmer needed one of those.
Arnie Palmer alert, baby!
But yeah, I mean, the 54-hole lead to a win is almost as impressive as just winning in general at this point. We saw the stat years ago with Tiger where he's like 93% conversion on his 54-hole leads, which is like not even close to the second place person.
Yeah, it's just ungodly.
Yeah, but like in general, a 33% chance, which is what we're going to stick with because that's the most recent stat that I know of, unless you have another one in front of you right now. To be able to do that to win your first tour event at an invitational like this is incredibly impressive. And I don't think we've seen the last of Kurt. I'm gonna be honest.
I don't think so either, because after this win, like, people just immediately started talking about the Ryder Cup, and I was like, okay, hold on now. Kid just got his first PGA Tour win. We're just gonna go for Ryder Cup talk. I mean, that's all right. But you know, sure. 54.
Yeah, I mean, but the other thing too that makes me like, I don't know.
So after last season, it went up to 44%.
Okay.
Because I believe two guys last year were able to do it.
Less than half. And you have all these great golfers chasing you. The thing that keeps resonating in my mind, last year we had a young guy who had never won on the PGA Tour, had two wins, his first two wins going into the Arnold Palmer Invitational, where there's still a lot of questions about whether he was for real or if this was kind of a fluke. And that young man grew up to be Scottie Scheffler with his win at the Arnold Palmer.
That young man grew up in the span of a calendar year. Well, I mean, but I guess if you look at it, yeah, he grew up into, like, golf grew up, quote unquote, into one of the best players in the world.
But, like, think about where we were this time last year. He had his first two wins under his belt. Everyone was still questioning how good he was at the game of golf, like if it was a fluke or if he was actually becoming one of the better golfers on tour.
Right.
He won the Arnold Palmer. People started to stop questioning it. That was when people kind of like were like, okay, maybe this kid is for real, because it's been 5 weeks or however many weeks it had been. Not even probably. It was like 4 weeks or something like that. And he has three. Yeah, he was 3 for 4, I think. They were like, he's 3 for 4 right now. Maybe he is for real. And then he goes and wins the Masters, and obviously all questions are immediately erased because it's the Masters.
You know, he's got both jackets.
So last year we see this historic run from Scotty. Now we got Kurt Kitayama winning at this event. It's like, if you're going to win at a place to catapult your career, I feel like this is becoming the place to do it. If we see Kurt Kitayama continue to play really good golf and kind of like just become one of the guys on tour that we're talking about week in and week out, we might have to start talking about this, because it's an invitational with some great golfers, and you can really get your wits. Like, you can really, I don't know how to say this. You can really learn how to have balls of steel and close out a tournament.
100%.
This is really it comes down to.
You look at you might be onto something here about the Scottie Scheffler thing and the Arnold Palmer Invitational. I feel like the month of March is a big month to prove yourself and prove your worth as a golfer, because obviously last year they weren't considered designated events, but they were the big events that guys showed up to. Now they have the title designated events. Out of the last four events, three of them have been deemed designated events, which they have those titles because big guys already came to play those tournaments. Like they just indoctrinated them to have a name now, which means that the month of March, basically the entire thing, you have all the best players in the world playing against each other week in and week out. Right. Mm-hmm. So you win in March. That's something completely different, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that is where Scotty separated himself, was his ability to win at those events in March. Now, do we think that Kurt Kitayama is going to be Scotty Scheffler? Fuck it. Maybe. I don't know. There's no way to predict these things. I've come to take a guess at. Trying to guess when a guy is going to become like a perennial superstar in golf, unless you're like in it, and you're like watching the Corn Fair, you're following guys from college, you know all the stat lines, you know what they're good at, you know what makes a good PGA golfer and not just like luck or anything like that, then you might know.
Yeah.
This is not information I possess. So I don't know. He could be. I don't know. He looked really good, though. And, you know, like we said, under 50% conversion on a 54-hole lead into a win. Like that, let's like take a step back. A 54-hole lead is, you have been the best the entire tournament. All you got to do is continue what you just did for the last 3 days for one more day. And the conversion rate's under 50%. You know, like that's it. In theory, it sounds so easy, but it is so exponentially hard at the same time. So the congratulations to Kurt, obviously holding off the likes of Rory, Jordan Spieth, Patrick Cantlay, Scottie Scheffler, all the rest of the guys that were in the top 10. Completely great job. Well done. I do have to talk about, though, there was one guy who had the lead away from Kurt Kitayama on Sunday on the 14th hole, was 10 under. And that is none other than Jordan Spieth. Had his hands basically on the trophy. He was ready to go. All he had to do was not fuck up for four straight holes. What'd he do? He fucked up for four straight holes. he goes onto the 14th tee box at 10 under, a whole stroke ahead of Kurt Kitayama at the time, two strokes ahead of Rory McIlroy at the time. Bogeys the 14th par three. He misses his tee shot into the left sand trap, does not have a good out in the sand, and misses a putt. And this is a theme at this point with how he was missing putts. Let me see. I have the line here about
you. Bring up a good point while you're looking for that stat. Jordan Spieth had a two shot lead at one point. We didn't even mention the fact that Kurt Kitayama had a triple bogey on a hole.
Yep.
To drop out of the lead, and then came back to regain the lead and win the tournament.
Yeah.
100%. Like, that is so impressive to do, to not get in your head about it, especially when you don't have a wind under your belt yet. You're like, well, I guess this isn't my week. But to be able to come back from that and be like, no, I could still do this. Impressive. I mean, there's not really any other words to say it.
It's really impressive for the main point of, like you said, doesn't have a professional win, had not had a professional win up until that point, right? And to do it on a stage like that, you know, to do it in front of all of these huge names of golf, to do it in the face of a beloved golfer in Jordan Spieth, who everybody is so excited that he's, you know, everybody's saying he's back, etc. To do that and then watch a guy of Jordan Spieth's stature bogey, bogey, par, bogey on some tough but makeable putts,
yeah,
and watching somebody come to the acceptance that golf is hard right in front of your eyes after you just went through it. It takes almost this otherworldly type of calm to go from the ninth where you triple to then the back nine and be like, well, I have a whole nine ahead of me.
Yeah.
I have to shake this off. And he just, you look at it. He just did his job on the back nine. He parred everything up until the 17th when he birdied, and then parred 18. He did his job. Now, did the win kind of fall in his lap because of Jordan's speed slip up? Sure. But you look at how impressive that is, no matter how it shook out, whether he came in second or came in first. You look at how impressive it is to, on the ninth hole, triple, to be over on the day, to just continue to battle, do your job, make your pars, and eventually believe that birdie's coming.
Yeah, just string a bunch of pars together.
Yeah. And I think as amateurs, right, because after all, we are amateurs and we just talk about professional golf. I think as amateurs, we can take something away from this, right? We triple bogey all the time. Hell, we quadruple bogey. It could get even worse if you want to. I just don't feel like saying the absolutely insane words after the word quadruple. But
I don't like saying two numbers for one hole.
I don't like it. You know, if there's two numerical values to show the score I got on a hole, I'm probably not going to write it down because fuck it.
I got a par.
We can tell as amateurs, when that happens, which happens so frequently, it'll especially for somebody like me, who's an absolute head case, it'll stick with me for holes on end.
Oh, I'm done
two,
for
three holes afterwards. I could be done for the rest of the nine that I'm on at that point. Right. But it doesn't take an expert mind or an expert athlete to just rework the brain and start anew on a tee box. Any human can do it. And literally anybody, just because Kirk Kitayama happens to be an incredibly professional golfer and on the PGA Tour and has just officially won $3.6 million, doesn't make him any different than you or I or anybody else who's going up onto a tee box, right? We can just change the way that we think mentally and think that's in the past now. I have a brand new hole. I have a brand new opportunity. I have a brand new chance to change how this round is going. I don't have to make a birdie. I don't even have to make a par. If I make a bogey because I'm a bogey golfer, that is my par. You know, if I make a double, that's my bogey and that's fine. But if you just get away from like having that triple or having that quadruple ruin the rest of your round, something that I always need to work on. I'm terrible with it. And I think that us amateurs can take away, you know, just a thought. You disagree?
I disagree.
Oh, okay.
Let me put it to you this way.
I like it.
Professional golfers have the expectation of par.
Right.
A triple bogey for them on a par four is a seven. Okay. As an amateur a bogey golfer on a par four, I already have the expectation of a five. Okay. That's my, this hole went really well. Okay. Now, if I triple bogey in comparison to my already bogey on that hole, we're now at an eight. Okay.
We're in snowman territory. Right.
Snowman territory. We have a name for the number that goes on that scorecard. It's a snowman.
That's how you know it's bad.
You know things are getting bad at that point. Now,
when there's nicknames, not getting good.
Now, here's the thing, though, is a seven doesn't look that bad, because if I double bogey a par five, that's a seven. You can come back from a double bogey.
Oh, 100%.
Totally doable. But guess what? An eight on a par five is still a triple bogey. That's still a problem. It's still going to be very hard to come back from that. So as much as the one shot doesn't make a difference, it does, because at least for me, who's not super mentally strong on the golf course, if I see an eight on that card, it's done. Like,
my hopes and
dreams for this round are done for, because I'm not going to string together a bunch of birdies. I'm probably not even going to string together a bunch of pars. So guess what? The best I'm ever going to possibly do on this golf course is plus four.
Okay. So, well, here's how I would Maybe we should just do this moving forward. If any time that we get snowmen, which is going to happen frequently for us because we're amateurs, let's actually make the snowman, right? Let's put the little buttons on him. Let's give him his little arms. Give him his corn cob pipe and you know, what is it?
Button nose.
Yes, thank you. And, you know, two eyes made out of coal. But, you know, I feel like if you just make it a little art project, maybe you'll feel better going to the next hall.
I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not going to.
Especially
if I shoot an 8 on a par 4 and I got to go to a par 5, because you know my plan to rip that driver and try to make an eagle on this.
And it's the worst plan you could
which
have.
Which is going to just get me another snowman. So
precisely, yes. Yeah, also what I want you to do is next time we're golfing and I shoot an 8, I want you to look me in my eyes and tell me to make an art project out of it.
I'm going to. You're drawing crosses, snowman. And we're not driving anywhere until that's done. You're gonna be like, no, I just want to go. I'll be like, no, I have no.
Go ahead, Brian. Art project, huh? Do you feel better? You feel better about yourself now?
You feel like you can come back on this hole and do something really good?
Big man thinks better than Kirk Kitayama?
Do you?
Nope, you didn't draw the hat. I see the arms. You didn't draw a hat. Oh, gosh. I cracked myself up. But, you know, all things considered, if we're going to talk about him in the equation for the Ryder Cup, why not, right? If he continues to play like this and he does have some sort of weird Scottie Scheffler run, why not? Strike while the iron's hot, especially if you're the Ryder Cup captain of the U.S. The U.S. team, thank you. But to keep moving forward here, that was the Arnold Palmer and how we viewed it. But there was a large elephant in the room the entire tournament, and a lot of people were talking about it, and a lot of people were disgruntled with it. So here's kind of how it worked out. So the PGA Tour decided to unveil its designated events model for the coming year, so in the 2024 season, and how that's going to work. So that is going to consist of 8 selected designated events for 2024, which will consist of fields of 70 to 80 players and be played without a cut.
Wait a second.
Mm-hmm, yep.
I think I know somewhere else that has 8 events with no cuts.
Mm-hmm.
Am I wrong about mm-hmm. that?
No, you would be correct. I feel like we spent most of our summer last summer talking about something relatively similar. I do have to say, and that would be the the LIV Tour that we've talked about, what feels ad nauseum and complained about because of the legacy of golf, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And here we are as the PGA Tour, basically just hitting copy and paste. And see, this is the thing that, you know, we talked about on the podcast when like LIV started getting some tractions. I think we were in the second event. We were like, all we want is just to make sure the PGA Tour isn't going to hit copy paste and attempt to do the same exact thing in their face.
It's a bad look.
And we thought that
We said it was a bad look.
We said it was a bad look if you just do exactly what they're doing. And we thought that they weren't, once we heard about the golf league thing with Rory uh-huh. and with Tiger and everybody who was big in sports backing it. We were like, okay, they're doing something different. They're not hitting copy paste. They're moving forward and they're doing the right thing and trying to create something that's new and fresh on top of something else that was new and fresh. They're invigorating the game. They're bringing added life to it.
Uh-huh.
Instead, what they've done now is they've taken, I'm going to say, just 15 steps backwards and have decided to hit copy paste for 8 designated events in the coming season. Those events, I do not believe, have been announced yet as to what they are going to be, but there's going to be 8 of them. And I don't know if you know this, Rick, and I'm pretty sure you do. The LIV Tour has 8 events.
Uh-huh.
Right? But they don't have the rest of the events. They just have the 8. And obviously there is the difference of guaranteed contracts and et cetera in these PGA Tour events. The winner does still have to win the event in order to make the most money out of the purse, like a normal PGA event would. However, there is no cut, so everybody has a chance to make that kind of money. Now, my first question to you, is, do you think this is going to cause two separate tiers on the PGA Tour? Like, obviously, the PGA Tour already has the Korn Ferry Tour, which could be considered minor league golf. But now you're looking at the PGA Tour and all 125 players on it. And you're basically, you're not chopping it completely in half, but it's close enough.
Yeah, I mean,
going to 70 to 80 players.
You're essentially tiering it, like you said. It doesn't seem like there's much room to move where you need to move in a way. Like, if these are all designated events, that means there's going to be higher rewards. There's going to be probably more FedEx Cup points, probably more stuff towards ranking and stuff like that. And then you have these lower level events that these other guys in the 60 to 120 range of players, where they actually have a chance to win, or a better chance anyway, that aren't going to count as much. So if a guy like Kurt Kitayama, say next year, would have won a smaller event like the Puerto Rico Open, that might not be enough to catapult him into the next invitational. And at that point, you're thinking to yourself, okay, I just won an event technically on the PGA Tour. Why am I not invited to this next event?
Right. Yeah.
I think it could get a little foggy like that. Obviously, I would assume that they would say, hey, anybody who has won a tournament since our last designated event is invited to this one.
Sure. But
with what we're doing right now, you just never know.
Yeah, they didn't say specifically that it was going to be the top 70 ranked in the FedEx Cups, right? They said the field is going to be 70 to 80 players depending on the event. They did not specify how they're going to choose said players. I don't know if they're going to attempt to use. Yeah, there's a big difference here, because right now I'm looking at the top 70 in FedEx Cup points, and I'm looking at names I have no idea who these people are, but they've gained enough FedEx Cup points to be in the top 70, right? Yeah. Now, the official world golf rankings, that top 70 is a bit stingier, and that's more of like something that you build over a career.
Yeah.
And you have that name, you have that recognizability, you know? And that's kind of the distinct difference between the FedEx Cup rankings and the world golf rankings. Which one are they going to use? We don't know. Are they even going to use a ranking system? Are they just going to pull names that they think that people will begin to watch? That's also a possibility. I'm not sure. But I think you're agreeing with me that this is just going to cause two tiers on the PGA Tour.
Yeah. And let me put it to you this way. I'm looking at the FedEx Cup rankings right now. If, say, they decide to do the top 70, which is more than half of the people in the FedEx Cup rankings right now, guess who's number 71 in the FedEx Cup rankings?
I believe it's Jordan Spieth.
If I looked
correctly, yes.
It is Jordan Spieth. And then we go to, like, literally any random number. Like, let's say 51, okay? Tyson Alexander. Who the heck is that? You think the PGA Tour is going to let Tyson Alexander play in an event, in a designated event, before they let Jordan Spieth, who everybody knows and loves, play an event? I don't think so. Will Zalatoris, the kid who in his first ever major almost won the Masters, is 84 in the FedEx Cup rankings. You think that kid's not playing in every single one of these dedicated events?
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be nearly impossible for them to find something that doesn't upset some people. Hideki Matsuyama, number 90, Masters champion. You think he's not playing? Yeah, right.
Yeah, and that, like, for example, if I am, let's say I am Robbie Shelton, who is currently number 45 on the FedEx Cup, in the FedEx Cup rankings. If I'm that guy, and I don't get to play in a designated event because they decide to just choose names for who they think is the biggest, and I'm number 45 in the FedEx Cup standings, mm-hmm. I'm pissed off.
Yeah.
Because I know that event's for more money. I know there's not a cut, so I'm guaranteed to make money, basically. I want to play in that event, and I feel like the way I'm playing right now has proven that I should. Just because I don't have that career recognition doesn't mean I should be discounted from this event. So you're going to be running into this problem where there's going to be guys that, yeah, maybe we don't know and we don't care to watch per se, but they've played well enough to put themselves in a position where they deserve to play. But then For example, Jordan Spieth is sitting on his couch because technically he's outside of the number.
Do you want to hear the craziest one? If they were to do it this way with the FedEx Cup standings,
oh, give me one
right now. If we had a designated event, if you're going to tell me that the 215th ranked person in the FedEx Cup standings was not going to be playing in any designated event that he wanted to, you're lying.
Okay. Okay. I hear you, but I think in this case, it's a bit different.
It's not. Because if you're a professional.
It's Tiger.
No,
come on.
No, I get that it's Tiger. But if you're one of these guys who are fighting to be in the top 70, it's not different.
That's true.
Tiger did a lot for you. You're where you are because Tiger made golf so popular. But guess what? You don't give a fuck in that moment. You're pissed off because that's your opportunity to make a name for yourself. Sit your ass down, old man, and let me do my thing now.
Yeah, and you're a competitor too, and you want.
That's what I'm saying. That's the mindset that these guys are going to have if the 70th ranked guy who now has an opportunity to play in this designated event gets bumped for Tiger, who just plays whenever he wants, basically.
Yeah.
That's going to be a huge issue. And obviously the lower level guy is just going to get the boot, but that's a problem to me. I get it's Tiger, but you got to give these guys opportunities. So it's going to be huge how they decide to do this. I'm interested and I'm scared.
Yeah. Like we said, way back when we were talking about, we hope they don't do precisely what it is they're doing right now. It was going to be a bad look. Did we think that we were avoiding this after the time had passed? Yes, we thought we had avoided it. Here we are now, clearly not avoiding it. And it is still a bad look. That's still happening. It still does not look good optically. It looks like they're hitting copy-paste on what the LIV Tour was doing.
Yep.
And when Rory was asked about it, let me see if I can get his exact quotes here. McIlroy. You would think I'd have this up already because I'm a buffoon. All right, I can't. Oh, he says these smaller designated event fields will not only deliver substantial. Oh, and of course, it's just going to refresh on me. Substantial can't miss tournaments to our fans at important intervals throughout the season, but they also enhance the quality of full field events. Together, this approach provides a schedule that is cohesive, compelling, consequential, and with clarity for fans, players, and sponsors alike. Dude. That so is exactly what...
Cup is no longer consequential?
Yeah, well, not only that, but this is exactly how LIV was pandering to everybody. This is almost precisely what they had been saying.
Yeah.
And I think the one that hurts the most is the fact that Rory McIlroy is on it, too. You know, he says, quote, I love it. Obviously I've been a part of it and been in a ton of discussions. I think it makes the tour more competitive. I'm all about rewarding good play. I want to give everyone a fair shake at this, which I think this structure has done. Not really though. Cause it kind of depends.
Yeah.
It depends on how they're going to shake it out. He also went on to say it's trying to get the top guys versus the hot guys. Which I'm okay with if that's how we're going to do it, right? If we're going to take what has optically, since the beginning of the season, looks like guys who are hot and the guys who are just incredibly good, right? The top guys, the top flight. You get your guaranteed top 25 in there, and then you take the guys who are hot after that, right? You take guys that are like, for example, Kurt Kitayama coming off of a huge event win against a ton of the world's top 25. He's a guy you put in here. Even if he's outside of the top 70 to top 80, he's a guy that would go in the next event slot because he's got the hot hand. Last year, Scottie Scheffler, when we were all questioning whether or not he was the guy, whether he was Big Chef or not, he's a guy you put in there. I mean, he's still in there now, obviously, because he's a top event guy. But this is the issue where we don't know how they're going to go about choosing those players. So we can't say whether or not it's going to be the hot guys versus the top guys.
And right now, it's really easy to be able to say what Rory's saying about having the top and the hot guys in there because we're so early on in the season Kurt Kitayama got his first win. He's sixth in FedEx Cup ranking right now after one win. That's how quickly you can move up at this point in the season. But guess what? John Rahm already has over 2,000 FedEx Cup points. As the season progresses, it's going to be harder to just say, oh, this guy's hot. He's had four top fives in a row, but he's still 100th in the FedEx Cup rankings because that's all that he's done this season. Yep. Like, it's going to be a lot harder to do that because you're not going to be able to justify it as much. I get what Rory's saying right now. Makes sense. It's really easy to say at this point. It's kind of a cop-out if you ask me.
A little.
Yeah. Later on in the season, keep showing me that the hot hand is playing, and then we'll keep talking.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so this is their rollout. So basically this is happening no matter how much we complain or how much we say we don't like it, or this is going to happen in 2024. So the only thing that we can really do is sit back and see how it transpires. But I want to see how this year's designated events go, because right now the designated events this year have made for some compelling ass golf. The Waste Management was fantastic. Yep. The Genesis was fantastic. The Arnold Palmer, Jordan Spieth bogeying three of the last four holes to lose the lead, and Kurt Kitayama getting that birdie on 17 to take it back to even for the day and get the W. That's fantastic golf, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's what the designated events have provided so far this season. Why change the structure when it's so far going so well?
Yeah.
You know?
There's no reason to keep adding events, it doesn't seem like.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense to me. It might make sense to them, but I'm interested to see how it works in practice. I'm also interested to see if some of those smaller guys we were just talking about, so say you're one of the guys who's number 45 right now, it is early in the season, you were able to gain a bunch of points early mm-hmm. season when none of the big guys were playing, and now you still find yourself, luckily, in number 45 at this point in the year. And somebody's about to turn around and tell you you're not a hot enough hand and you're not a big enough name to play in a designated event. You don't have the chance to make money this week.
Yeah.
LIV Golf comes a-calling. Hey, I have this $1.2 million contract for you to play 8 events
mm-hmm.
without cuts. Travel the world.
You don't even have to win.
You don't even have to win. This is what you will be making baseline. If you do win or your team wins,
you'll make more.
You make extra money. How are you saying no to that? And then that is your FedEx Cup number 45 out the window.
Yep.
It happened to Cam Smith. You think about it. Cam Smith was in the top 10 in FedEx Cup standings.
Yeah.
He was there at the BMW fighting for the chance to get to the tour championship. He was there on Sunday, the tour championship, competing with Rory to win the whole damn thing. Be this close. Rory outplayed him though, thankfully, and then went and played at the LIV Tour. He solidified himself that I'm just as good as any of these guys on the PGA Tour. And now I'm going to go make millions upon millions of dollars to play 8 times a year and also get extra money if I do wind up winning.
Yeah. The other thing about Rory's comments too about making it more competitive is, at what point does it stop being more competitive? Because this year we have what, 4 designated events?
No, this year we have a bunch. I think it's like 20 or something. So far we've played 4.
So they're adding 8 more?
No, they're minimizing it to 8.
Oh, I thought they were okay.
No, so they're minimizing the designated event structure to only 8 events.
I thought they were,
and
I
then
I didn't
also
think they were doing that many
this year. Let me see. PGA Tour designated events. Let's see here. All right, so far, so it's 17. Sorry, 17 designated events this year.
Okay.
Yeah. So they're minimizing it to 8 only, but then also shrinking the field and no cuts.
Yeah. Okay. For some reason, I didn't think there was that many this year. But either way you look at it, you have 8 designated events where all these top guys are going to be playing.
Right.
You have the 4 majors where all these top guys are going to be playing, and the players where all these top guys are going to be playing.
Mm-hmm.
That puts you at what, 13 events?
Yep.
a lot of these guys don't play much more than like 25 events. So that gives you like a wiggle room of like 12 events that these top guys are going to be playing at. I feel like it does make it more competitive for the weeks that they're designated.
Right.
But the other weeks, it definitely does not.
Right. 100%.
And it goes back to your tier thing. I feel like we're going to be seeing at all these designated events are the only times we're going to be seeing these guys.
Yeah.
Unless we have a really solid plan in place for how you get invited to these events. Like you have to place so like a certain position at other events to be able to go to these events kind of thing. Just something very specific that's not going to show favoritism towards the top 10 people or whatever.
Right. There has to be some sort of motivation structure for a guy of Scottie Scheffler's stature or John Rahm's stature to want to go and fly into Iowa and play at the John Deere.
Yeah.
Right. There has to be some sort of incentive structure for these guys to play at the smaller events, because if they don't, you have now turned the PGA Tour into a random mixture of golfers that nobody knows about. And if they win enough on those small little events, then people will know about them and they get to play in the eight big events. And then in the eight big events is when you will finally see all the golfers that you want to watch week in and week out, but you only can eight times a year. And at that point, just watch live. They have Dustin Johnson. He's over there. They have Cam Smith. He's over there. They have all of these guys over there doing this already.
Yeah.
They're already doing this. You know, it's a bad look, and we've said it before, but it's a bad look because of how it's shaking out, you know?
Yeah.
And how it's been so long since LIV has established themselves and what they're doing. And now the PGA Tour is like, we're going to do that too. That just doesn't make any sense to me. Just doesn't make any sense to me. I don't think it's a good idea. I'm not sure how it's going to pan out, but I just don't see it panning out well.
Yeah, definitely not.
Now, then again, like Rick said, and I agree with him, if they come out with some sort of incredible incentive structure where you have to gain enough, maybe not wins, but you have to play well enough, do well enough, have enough events played elsewhere throughout the season in order to even think about qualifying for these events. If it is a top-down, foolproof structure, then sure. Let's find out how it goes.
Yeah,
I'm all for it then. But at the same time, I feel like that's going to be really something hard to sell to a guy like John Rahm, who knows that out of those eight events, he's probably going to win twice just because that's the kind of clip he's winning at right now. And he's going to make more than he would in a regular season by playing a bunch of events.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, is if you think for a second the PGA Tour has any leverage over these guys, you're just wrong. Because if they decide, you know what, John Rahm, you're not playing enough, you can't come to this designated event, and LIV steps in and is like, hey, John, how's it going? Here's a bunch of money. And John's like, well, screw the PGA Tour. They didn't want me to play in this event, so now I'm going to go make millions of guaranteed money over here. Yeah, they're going to lose people. Like, as much as everybody says they're on the PGA Tour for legacy and because that's where the best golfers are, if there's any issues with this structure where the big guys aren't allowed to play because they don't play enough or something like that, they're going to have issues with more people leaving. And the LIV 100%. Tour will gladly kick off the Chase Koepkas of the LIV Tour to have John Rahm.
they are not afraid to buy out those contracts that those smaller guys on that tour have to bring in some of the big guys here. Yep. You know, they're not afraid of that. They will do it because, you know, basically they have the endless vat of money.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where this could easily be where the PGA loses a step or two to the LIV Tour. And we'll see how it shakes out. Obviously, this isn't going to happen this year, but you might see, based off reactionary reasons, since this just got announced, you might start seeing some names going over there now or in the coming weeks, maybe even after the Masters, right?
Yeah.
You could see this begin to happen soon, you know?
Yeah.
I have one more question about this for you. Do you think that this is going to dilute the product? Do you think if this happens, any casual fan, even like the kind of into it casual fans, you know, people that watch all the events maybe not Thursday and Friday, but they're always watching Saturday and Sunday, no matter the event, right? Do you think now they're going to go, I'm not even going to bother wasting my time for any of these other events. I'm only going to watch the designated top eight events. And even then, I might not even watch all of those. Do you think that this structure is going to dilute the product?
I think there's a chance of it for sure. I think this product is, it's weird. It's, to compare it, I feel like the comparison I have to make right now is to football. I'm sure you've heard of Anthony Richardson at this point, yes, quarterback for the Florida Gators, and who yep. just went through the combine process. Mm-hmm. He's climbing up a lot of people's draft boards because he had a great combine, but people are still saying that he's either going to be amazing in the league or he's going to be a huge bust, and there's no in between. And I feel like that's what this product is.
Yep.
It's either going to be a huge bust and it's going to go incredibly poorly for whoever decides to buy into it, or it's going to go really well and it's going to be the thing that saves the PGA Tour from the LIV Tour.
Yeah, and I think I 100% agree with you, and I think your idea is the best that I've heard so far. The only way it goes well is if they have a foolproof, mm-hmm. strap-down plan to motivate these players to play the rest of the season,
yep.
and not just the eight events. It has to be that way, or there's just going to be no way that these big players are going to want to play that many tournaments, yep. when they know that they can just win one or two of these designated events or a place in the top 10 in one of these one or two designated events that they have to play and make a season's worth of money. You know? Yeah, I get it. It's not guaranteed, but it's basically guaranteed because there's no damn cut, you know? And there's 70 of you.
So
it's
basically
the same thing.
I just looked it up because I was curious and I thought I saw this stat before. I'm pretty sure this is right. Let me see. Yeah. Under the PGA Tour rules, a member, aka golfer, must compete in a minimum of, do you know how many events? As a condition of their membership voting rights. So basically to continue to be a member.
I'm going to say 7.
No, more than that.
Okay. 12?
A little bit more.
15.
Yes. So okay. they had to compete a minimum of 15 PGA Tour events each season as a condition of their membership voting rights. It can be any 15 events. Oh, pop up.
Oh, no, not the pop up ads.
It can be any 15 events co-sanctioned by the PGA Tour, including the 4 majors and the 4 World Golf Championships, as well as any of the FedEx Cup playoff events, as long as they compete in 15 events. So,
so I feel like the incentive has to be like you play 15 events to keep your card. You have to play 30 to even think about participating in these designated events. I think you got to double down basically.
Yeah. Okay. So it says if a player didn't have a lifetime membership status, that is to say having 20 PGA Tour wins, minimum of 15 years on the PGA Tour or veteran status, they have to add an event to their schedule each season they hadn't played in the prior 4 seasons. Unofficial events like the President's Cup and Ryder Cup count towards the total event tally, but a player needs to add a new event to their schedule, provided they plan on playing less than 25 tournaments that season. So I guess they have to play 25.
I guess that's how that shakes out. I mean, the way that this works is, you know, usually before the season, players will input the events that they're playing in that year. They hand in that list to the PGA Tour and they go, here are the tournaments I'm going to be playing in this year, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that's basically how they determined what the designated events this year were going to be, based off the players' names, how uh-huh. many of them were on that list, et cetera. But yeah, you have to make it incentivizing for these players to continue to play in the other events, or else there's just no need to have them. You're not going to make money off them. In fact, you're probably going to lose money off them if you're the yeah. tour. And this could completely blow up in your face if you don't have that good enough incentive.
Yeah. I'm taking it at 25 events.
Right. So you might need to increase.
You take into account the 8 designated events, 4 majors, you're at 12. Players, you're at 13. four WGC events, you're at 17. And then if you are in the FedEx Cup playoffs, that's three events there. So you're at 20. Right. So you only have to add five other events. Like, that's not going to go well.
No.
In the name of having good big players at other events. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you're going to choose. You have to make that number larger. WGC, yeah. You're going to choose the players. You're going to choose all these other events. You're not going to choose the Puerto Rico Open. Like,
no. Like, you're not going to go to the – well, you're probably not going to choose the Puerto Rico Open because if you're – if you are big enough to be considered for these designated events, you're probably playing the Arnold Palmer.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. But they're not going to opt to play the John Deere. They're not going to opt to play the Honda. You know, like, these are events that are just going to get skipped by a lot of players if they don't have a good enough incentive program for these players to be like, I have to in order to play here.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't even have to be incentive. I'm not talking about, I guess incentive is the word I've been using, but basically force them to play more events. It has to be that way. You can't give them a choice because we know what the choice is going to be.
Yep.
To keep moving forward away from that, obviously we're a whole season away from that even being a thing that's happening. So we will talk about it when we get to it, basically. But that is probably going to be an ongoing storyline as the season continues. So stay weary on that, folks. But we move forward as we are going to have the Players Championship this coming week. It's a big one, another designated event, a beautiful TPC course for TPC Sawgrass. The beautiful, 16th hole par three? Or the 17th, 17th hole.
Yeah.
The par three 17th with the island green has ruined many, many a round before, and we'll see if it does it again. But we have the power rankings here. Rick, you know the rules, and actually we have... I got to say, Rob Bolton's been pretty staunch in his laurels when it comes to the designated events. We've seen these people in the top five before. Okay. But I will list them off to you. You put them in the order, and here we go. Max Homa, Rory McIlroy, Scotty Scheffler, Jason Day, and John Rahm. Only one that I haven't seen in the top five so far is Jason Day.
No way Jason Day is not five.
You would be correct there.
So I'm going to go Jason Day. I'm going to go Rory, Max, Scotty, and John.
Man, you were so close. You just flipped Rory and John.
Rory and John? Is Rory's one?
Yeah, and John's four. So we'll see what's going on. You got the rest right, though. Good on you. Well, let's see what Rob's reasoning here is. So number five, Jason Day. This one's interesting because I feel like we haven't heard from him in quite some time.
Not too much, no.
The Aussie has known that he's had the presented extra gear laying around somewhere. Five top 10s among nine top 25s this season alone, including in each of his last four starts, third in bogey avoidance, winner here in 2016 with a pair of top 10 since. Okay, I didn't know he was playing that hot right now.
Yeah, I didn't either.
Looks like he's off to one hell of a start here.
So,
yeah, I mean, 2016, that's when Jason Day was like,
Previous wins do help, as we've seen. So,
especially when a single event is always played at the same course. I mean, I know it's a TPC course, and so it's not necessarily a major, but it's close enough. It's the Players.
Yeah.
Number four, John Rahm can't win them all, and he can't finish inside the top 38 and all either because, well, that's golf, and he knows it. It'd be unwise. So, I mean, I know it's a very accurate number, but it is true. He can't finish in the top 38 of every event. It is unwise to try to tackle TPC Sawgrass with a chip on his broad shoulders. But do we have to bring up that his shoulders are broad, Rob?
Rob, do you need to go?
Are you hitting on John Rahm right now? Are you hitting on him? You like your spicy Spaniards, Rob?
Keep it down. Keep it down, Rob.
Yeah, keep it down there. But the reset of a new week will ease that pressure. Oh, he's talking about the pressure on his shoulders now. You trying to give him a massage, Rob? You masseuse now? On top of being a horrendous analyst?
Rob's loving the spicy Spaniard.
Loves it. He says he's 5 for 5 with a pair of top 15s here before. John Rahm's going to John Rahm. That's a fact. He's definitely going to be in the conversation. We kind of thought he was going to be in the conversation this last week, but a difficult Arnold Palmer. But, you know, if you piss off the Spaniard, it's probably not going to go in your favor.
Yeah.
So no, we'll see how
he can not be inside the top 38.
Yeah. That 38 number, he holds on to that dearly. Okay. It's his favorite number.
37 might survive, but 38, absolutely not.
37, you have a chance. 38, none. Number three, Max Homa. If he closes his eyes, he can pretend like he's in California. Didn't we already type this out?
I feel like that.
I've heard that before.
That definitely was one of his explanations before.
Rob, you're repeating yourself, buddy. Come on.
We have definitely heard that one before.
Be better. Be better. The way he's going, every state is golden, including the state of mine. In three trips to Bay Hill, he's finished. Wait, what? Did he hit copy and paste? This motherfucker.
He copied and pasted from last week? No yes. way, Rob.
That's, Rob, we gotta be better than this, buddy. That's come unbelievable. On. This, for the record, this is Power Rankings, the Players Championship, posted 2 hours ago on the PGA Tour article website by Rob Bolton Golf. Rob. He hit... Like, the John Rahm paragraph talks about TPC Sawgrass. We know this is talking about the players. And you hit copy and paste on the Max Homa. Robert. Robinson Bolton. How dare you? How dare you insult our intelligence like this? Like, you wouldn't read it. The hell's wrong with you? Golly. All right, well, Max Homa's just a third. For whatever reason now.
He's just really good at Bay Hill. I don't know what to tell you.
He's just really good at Bay Hill. It's just, I'll tell you what, when he shows up at Bay Hill this week, he's going to be like, where's everybody else? Thought we were doing this twice. No? Nobody? Let's see if he, okay. So so here's Scotty's number two. At some point, you think he'll be immune from what has been his kryptonite at TPC Sawgrass. The rest of these are talking about the players. Are you looking it up?
See, mine doesn't have that.
No?
I'm looking at my Power Rankings one right now, and it doesn't have the mess up. Screenshot it and send it to me, though.
Here, I'll take a... it's not on my phone, so I'll take a picture.
Okay.
Yeah, it says, if he closes his eyes, he can pretend like he's in California. Maybe I got to the article fast enough, and he didn't have the chance to update the code yet.
I don't know, because here's what mine says for Max Homa at three. If it could be measured, he'd lead the tour in strokes gained. Perspective. Of course he would. Ben Crane used to preach being in the now. Homa is what that looks like. He's also experienced at TPC Sawgrass with a T13 in his second try last year, closing with a 66.
Yeah, that is not what mine says. You'll see what I sent it to you. As mine's talking about Bay Hill.
That is amazing.
That's hilarious. All right, but I guess we'll move on to Scottie Scheffler. Number two, at some point you think you'll be immune to what has been kryptonite at TPC Sawgrass. Call it a learning curve in the meantime. Otherwise, it hasn't mattered much. The elements, the competition, or how he's feeling. He's been all facets of super, comma, man. Nice. That's a nice note. I will say it makes up for the boo-boo error here, but it's nice. Did you get the picture I sent you?
Yeah, I'm tweeting it right now.
That's crazy. You got to be kidding me right now.
I'm going to tweet it at him and ask what the heck is going on.
Yeah, buddy, did you miss something? Because it's different here than it is on there. And number one, Rory McIlroy, classic record among the best in the world at TPC Sawgrass. Since 2017, he's 3-for-5 with a win in 2019 as his only top 30. Results worldwide in 2023 have been similarly split. Top 25s among four starts are a win in Dubai and a T2 at Bay Hill. Number one in strokes gained tee to green so far this year. Yeah, Rory's going to Rory. He's having one hell of a year. Hasn't been able to... He hasn't gotten a win this year, right? Does Who? Does Rory have a win this year?
I don't believe so.
I don't think so either, but I feel like he might. So I'm going to look it up before I start sounding stupid. All right, 2023 season. No, he does not have. He has a win, but it's at the Hero Dubai Desert Classic, which is on the Euro Tour. That came back in January. So he hasn't been able to kind of punch his ticket yet this season on the PGA Tour, obviously coming off of being the tour champion last year, which I don't know if you know this. That's a pretty big deal. But when I tell you, this is going to be one of those things where I think the Players is going to provide one hell of a golf tournament. I don't know why I feel this way, but when it comes to the Players, I have always felt that it just provides some of the best golf that you've seen throughout the year. And that it's the main event that you like. If you're like one of those people that doesn't watch golf again until the Masters, if you wanted to watch an event before the Masters, this is the one, right? Yeah. If you want to get back in a little early, the Players might be the one. Obviously, if you want to get in even earlier and watch the People's Open, the best golf tournament there is, watch the Waste Management. But the Players is always something cool. Any of the TPC courses, I think, are fantastic events, and usually guys play really well there and that there's great golf. So I'm going to be watching. Rick's going to be watching. It's going to be one hell of a tournament. But Rick, unless you have any other golf news, that's going to do it for this episode.
No, that's it for me.
All righty. As always, folks, thank you so much for listening to what we do here. We love the fact that you guys enjoy that we talk about random crap as well as golf. We try to give it a little bit of both because we understand that, you know, not everybody is here for 100% golf data and nerdness, but it is, you know, kind of the whole reason that we have the podcast. So we like to share life insight with you as well as talk about golf with each other, and you guys get to listen to it, and we appreciate that you enjoy it. Go ahead and follow us on Instagram at @FromTheTips_pod on there, and Twitter, which Rick just tweeted off a tweet, at @FTT_pod. Go ahead and hit follow, like, retweet, like all the stuff that we have on Instagram. Comment, feel free to DM us on either of those platforms. We will respond to you. We are not afraid to respond to anybody. We are still a very small podcast, so we want to keep our fans as entertained as possible. But as always, thank you so much for listening, and we out.
Thanks, guys. See you later.